Good evening, everybody, and thank you for waiting so long. I'm going to call the Subcommittee on Clean Water to order. This is April 20th. We do have a quorum present, and the first item on the agenda will be Senate File 1680, Senator Langseth. This is the Buffalo River Watershed Water Quality Pilot Project. Welcome, Senator Langseth.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, the state PCA decided to do two pilot projects around the state of Minnesota, which would involve the entire watershed to be studied for total maximum daily load. One of those was the Buffalo River watershed, and this bill would fund that to the tune of $250,000. The Buffalo River watershed is alongside the North Dakota border up in northwestern Minnesota.
State your name for the
Madam Chair
record.
Members, my name is Joel Carlson. I own a government affairs business here in St. Paul, and I represent the Buffalo Red River Watershed District, and we appreciate your consideration for this pilot project that will allow on a pilot basis a watershed to develop TMDLs on a watershed basis as opposed to just a impaired water body basis. And I think it's an excellent way to address and cost-effective way to address TMDL development. We'd appreciate your support.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Galen Reitz. I'm the director of the Regional Division at the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency. I just wanted to state that we fully support the watershed concept as a proposal of doing TMDLs. We funded this project in 2008 for the initial 1 year of funding. As we are transferring from an approach of doing single parameter, kind of single segment TMDLs, and we're trying to become more efficient and effective, and we selected two pilot projects to pilot the watershed concept of doing multi-parameter, multi-segment TMDLs, and the Buffalo Red is one of those projects. I can't really support the bill as proposed because it's not within the governor's budget. However, I would say that within the governor's budget, if the governor's budget for the Clean Water Fund is funded as proposed, we would continue funding for this pilot project with the Buffalo Red. If the governor's budget or the G16 or Clean Water Council, those recommendations move forward, it would be included in those packages.
Are there questions for the
Madam Chair?
Senator Fredrickson.
Madam Chair, how large a watershed is the Buffalo River watershed?
Madam Chair and Senator Fredrickson,
Carlson.
It's about 1,100 square miles.
Can you describe for us, Mr. Carlson, the location of this Buffalo Ridge watershed?
Madam Chair, members, it includes parts of Ottertail, Becker, Clay, and Wilkin counties in northwestern Minnesota. The Buffalo River starts at the Tamarack Lake in Becker County, which is, I'd say, roughly geographically maybe 20 miles south of Detroit Lakes is maybe a good reference point.
There's actually two branches of Buffalo, the one he's talking about and then the southern branch, and they meet up there, and then they flood as they go.
Right, into the Red. It's the Buffalo Red River watershed.
I'm glad I asked because I was thinking of the other one. Senator Fredrickson.
Madam Chair, Mr. Reitz, at what stage are you in developing a TMDL? Are you still in the assessment stage of?
Madam Chair, Senator Fredrickson, this pilot is kind of mid-stage. The Buffalo Red Watershed District has done a significant amount of work previously that would fold into it. There will be some additional monitoring that will be conducted this summer that will fold into it, and then the whole package will be pulled together. So it will at least be another year or so before this large or major watershed scale TMDL would be completed.
Mr. Senator Fredrickson.
Madam Chair, Mr. Eats, or Mr. Carlson, Senator Lang said you included $250,000. How accurate an amount is that? How did you arrive at $250,000?
Mr. Chairman and
Mr. Carlson.
Excuse me, Madam Chair and Senator Fredrickson. Through the engineer and the engineering firm within the watershed district, they've developed the cost estimate for the project, and they based that partly on a project that was done further north of us with about an 8-mile segment of river where the TMDL development cost about $350,000. We think we can catch a big chunk of the entire watershed for this amount of funding.
Mr. Reitz, I have a question. As I've been listening to the bills and the reports coming from the MPCA and from DNR and other places, I thought the plan was to address the cleaning of lakes, rivers, and streams on a watershed basis, trying to get to all 81 watersheds in 10 years. So when you said this was not part of the governor's recommendations, was this particular watershed not included in this particular first round of projects?
Madam Chair, this approach, the project approach they're taking, is actually a pilot that we funded $100,000 in 2008. What I'm saying is that this bill specifically isn't included in the governor's budget. The project activity is included in the governor's budget.
See.
So it is one of the 84 majors that we're looking at doing through the 10-year cycle, yes.
So, Mr. Reitz, does this accelerate ahead of schedule what the plan was for the, you know, 8 or 10 watersheds that will be done this year and so on, or is this going to be part of that? That's what I'm trying to figure out. Was this going to be part of the first round of those in that 10-year plan?
Madam Chair, yes. Actually, we funded it starting this past year, and we would continue to fund it into this next year until we got this piece completed. So it's in process, and we would continue to fund it if the package is funded.
And finally, I don't know whether it would be Mr. Carlson or yourself, Mr. Reitz, can you give us a sense of the participation in the TMDLs around the watershed district? Who's participating and what kind of activities will be going on?
Madam Chair and members, I have a draft copy of the work plan that I'd be happy to share with the committee that goes through all the stakeholders that are participating in it, the different communities and the stakeholders as well. I'm happy to provide a copy of that to you if you're so interested.
That would be appreciated. Are there additional questions for the Senator Fredrickson? Do you want to move the bill?
Madam Chair, I would. I'd move that the bill be considered for
Senate File 1680.
Move that Senate File 1680 be considered for including in the committee bill.
Any discussion on the motion? All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The motion prevails. Thank you, Senator Langseth.
Moorhead is the big town in the district, if that helps with your geographic.
Well, Madam Chair, do you know what the level of funding was that we talked about in the bill for the watershed districts to fund these kind of projects?
Do you know, I don't know if I have the spreadsheet with me.
Yeah, I've forgotten. I don't know if I...
It's pretty significant. I think...
Well, Madam Chair, I think if you look at the governor's budget, it's at least about $12 million in the second year. And I know there was something less. I don't have it in front of me right now, but there was... I think that the money they're talking about here is the money for actually doing the assessments and the TMDL
okay.
plan. So There was a significant amount of money in the governor's budget and in the Senator Frederickson's bill for that.
Okay.
Senator Stephen is here. I think so. Let's take up Senate File 671, Senator Stephen. Welcome to the committee, Senator Stephen.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. Senate File 671 is commonly referred to as the Mississippi River Critical Area Reform Legislation, and many of you have already heard this bill either in state and local government or in environment policy. And, Madam Chair, first I will go through just a broad description of the bill, and then I do have a couple of amendments to offer. So the legislation, real briefly, makes four major changes to the existing Mississippi River critical area law. It authorizes rulemaking for the critical area by the DNR. It provides guidance for establishing new corridor districts that take into account the diversity of different sections of the critical area. And it provides for key definitions related to bluffs and steep slopes. And finally, it clarifies enforcement responsibilities of local government units, the DNR, and other state agencies. So, Madam Chair, first, if someone would please move the A6 amendment, and I can describe it.
Madam Chair, I move the amendment.
Senator Torres Ray moves, is it the A6?
Correct.
The A6 amendment? All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Madam Chair.
The motion prevails. I'm sorry.
A brief description of it, and most of these changes were made to accommodate concerns that were expressed by various stakeholder groups. In the first part, do all the members have it? Looks like it. In the on lines 1.2 to 111, and also on lines 1.20 to 1.21, it just clarifies that the guidelines of the current executive order will remain in effect after the bill's passage, but before the rules are adopted. Lines 111 to 112 would require the DNR to directly consider municipal ordinances when establishing districts for the corridor. And this would respond to some cities' concerns that the standards they have in place now would be included in the rulemaking process. Lines 13 to 19 on the amendment would add recreational areas and clarify that the use of the river as a source of drinking water is important in establishing the districts. And this, again, responds to citizen concerns. Lines 1.22, this is language that was adopted in the House version that says that in case the Coon Rapids Dam is recommissioned for hydropower use, that would be an exemption to be considered by the DNR. On lines 23 to 24, it would reduce the fee for failure to notify the DNR within 10 days from $500 to $50, and this was respond to the concerns that were raised by the League of Minnesota Cities. And in lines 25 to 28, we're removing the cost recovery provisions and the fees for the DNR review of variances and other discretionary actions. And again, this was we're taking this out to respond to concerns from the League of Cities and some landowners. On lines, and then finally on lines 30 to the end, it appropriates money to do the rulemaking from the Clean Water Fund to cover the bluff mapping and the rulemaking. And the rationale for this is that the Mississippi River is obviously a very significant water resource for our state. Over 25% of the entire river is in Minnesota. And updating the critical area standards for the metro area will help protect this important resource for future generations. Of course, we all know that the most intense pressure on development for the Mississippi River within Minnesota is in this portion, and obviously also non-point source pollution is a major concern. So that was the rationale for coming before you to this committee and changing the appropriation section. So I'm happy to stand for questions on the amendment, if there are any.
Are there questions on the amendment? Senator Chaudhry.
Thanks, Madam Chair. Senator Sieben, what is the Environmental Quality Council?
Mr. Chair, I would defer to Whitney Clark from the Friends of the Mississippi River, who helped come up with this language.
Mr. Clark.
Madam Chair and members, my name is Whitney Clark. I'm the Executive Director of Friends of the Mississippi River. Senator Chaudhry, when Executive Order 7919 was promulgated, it originally gave the EQC, I'm not exactly sure what the exact history was, but gave the EQC authority to oversee this program, and that in the 1980s that authority was transferred to the DNR. So that's historical language that's in there.
So Madam Chair.
Senator Chaudhry.
Mr. Whitney?
Yes.
Mr. Clark, what is the Environmental Quality Council does not exist anymore? Is that correct?
Mr. Clark?
Madam Chair, Senator Chaudhry, my understanding is that the EQC was the old name for the EQB.
Perhaps council could provide some more guidance or clarification.
Madam Chair and Senator Chaudhry, I know when I first looked at this, I thought the same thing. Why are we referring to the Environmental Quality Council? I looked back at the 79 order, and that was the entity at the time. They have since changed the name to Environmental Quality Board. I'm not sure that you'd have to have that reference to the council because the Environmental Quality Board took over all the duties of the council. But it still does say that in the 79 order, so I just left it in. I said I don't know that you'd have to have that in there, but I don't see a problem because that order is still referred to as the Environmental Quality Council. Right. In the order, that hasn't been changed since 79.
So I guess more substantive question than Madam Chair,
Senator Chaudhry.
Mr. Knopf, under the lines 3 through 11, would the EQB then have administrative authority over the Critical Area Program, Mississippi's River Corridor Critical Area Program, under this proposal, at least?
Chair and Senator Chaudhry, under current law, the critical areas is under the Environmental Quality Board. What this does is takes the Mississippi River Corridor and transfers the duties to the Commissioner of Natural Resources.
I see. So then
Madam Chair, if you look at duties of the Environmental Quality Council and Environmental Quality Board, those referenced and published that are related to the Mississippi River Corridor critical areas shall be the duties of the commissioner. So now they're the duties of the Commissioner of Natural Resources.
So maybe Mr. Clark or Senator Sieben can explain why you'd like to do that.
Madam Chair, Clark. Senator Chaudhry, my understanding of this is that the switch in authority from the EQB to the DNR was done administratively. In the late 80s sometime, and this would be codifying that administrative change. Since the late 80s, the DNR has been the agency that has been responsible for administering the critical area program. And we're just maintaining that in this bill.
So, Madam Chair, Mr. Knopf, is it making that codification under this? So we're clarifying, there was always this, is it true that there was always this ambiguity with regards to the law and who was actually doing the administration, and this just sets that straight?
This would effectuate that change. Apparently the change happened administratively, but it's never happened in these statutes anyways, to clarify that goes forward.
Okay, thank you.
Are there additional questions on the amendment? So we've moved the amendment. The questions have been asked. And we've adopted the amendment. Pardon? Well, we haven't really addressed the bill. We've just addressed the amendment, right?
Correct. Madam Chair, I also have Senator Anderson wanted to move the A5 amendment, and since she had to be someplace else right now, I told her that I would ask the committee's consideration of the A5 amendment if someone would be willing to move it.
Thank you.
And I can explain it first.
Thank you. Senator Frederickson moves the A5 amendment.
Thank you, Senator Frederickson.
On the amendment.
Madam Chair and members, the A5 amendment takes into account concerns that were raised by the cities of St. Paul and Minneapolis. And just to briefly run through it, a lot of it is similar to what was adopted in the A6 amendment. On lines 1.2, it would just say that the Mississippi River critical area is managed as a multi-purpose resource, which is our intent. It's sort of just clarifying language. On line 1.3, it's just clarifying that the commissioner shall establish through rule making districts within the critical area. Again, that was our intent, but it clarification. And then on line 1.4 of the amendment, again, this is just clarifying language that the commissioner must seek to determine an appropriate number of districts within any one municipality and take into account adopted local plans and policies and existing ordinances and conditions. Again, that was similar to what I talked about before, and that also would apply then for the rest of the language on the amendment. So the intent is to help ensure that until that rulemaking takes effect, that existing resources or that existing ordinances would be in effect. And I think that's about covers the amendment.
So Senator Frederickson has moved the A5 amendment. Is there any discussion on the amendment? Senator Torres Rang.
Madam Chair, thank you. Senator Stephen, in the amendment on page 2, line 7, could you tell me what as a multi-purpose resource actually means? It says... So if we read this, it would say Mississippi River Corridor critical area is managed as a multi-purpose resource in a way. Could you explain what that is?
Certainly. Madam Chair and Senator Torres Ray, the reference to a multi-purpose resource came out of the executive order, and so that is just taking that language that was in the executive order and inserting it here. It refers to, it's really just trying to say that there are many uses or many purposes of the river, for instance, recreational, economic opportunities. Of course, we reference later drinking water to use. The river as a resource is used for many purposes.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Senator Chaudhry.
So then, Madam Chair, Senator Sieben or Mr. Clark, how then are we reaffirming this as a critical area if we're just recognizing it as a multiple-use recreational area? Aren't we just kind of defeating the purpose then?
Isn't it just
a park then?
Senator Sieben.
Madam Chair and Senator Chaudhry, you'll see that after lines 2.27 in the amendment, that it would require that the commissioner shall consider or manage the area in a way that conserves the scenic, environmental, recreational, mineral, economic, cultural, and historic resources and functions of the river corridor. The second section there references that it's a shipping and transportation corridor, and third, that that obviously this is a urban area and there are many uses for it, including industrial, commercial, and residential uses. So I would hope that that language would bring some comfort to some people who have concerns over the bill. So it's actually saying that the commissioner must take these various uses into account when establishing the new rules.
Are there additional questions on the amendment?
Madam Chair.
Mr. Knopf.
Just one quick, this was done in advance of my seeing it. On line 1.3 and 1.7, where it says through rule, I think a better way to do that would be to say by rules separated by commas, so that it's just more of a more traditional way of doing things. I think it's easier to read and understand. So on 1.3 and 1.7, I recommend to delete through rule in each place and just insert comma by rule, comma, in each place.
Senator Fredrickson. Senator Fredrickson makes you, what would we call this, an oral amendment?
For the amendment.
Okay.
So I will incorporate
those changes into the amendment. You'll incorporate those changes in your amendment. Thank you. One of these days I'll get it straight. Are there additional comments or questions on the amendment?
Madam Chair, Senator Sieben, you know, this is an area that I really want to pay a lot of attention, and I'm very happy that you're bringing this before us. I'm somewhat concerned, however, that this is kind of a significant piece of policy that I would have loved to give it more attention to and not to come late in the evening to a subcommittee to entertain. So I'm somewhat concerned, Senator Sieben. I'd like to hear clearly, these are issues that we need to address and take care of. But this is significant, and I want to make sure that I put that on the record, that I would have loved to know earlier, see this earlier, and perhaps even make sure that in this case this policy would have gone through Senator Chaudhry's committee, in fact, because this is about five pages of policy here that we're trying to put together in an evening where I'm kind of tired, but I want to put that on the record so that if there is something that I needed to pay attention to.
Senator Sieben, what committees has this been through?
Madam Chair, it has been through Senator Chaudhry's committee, and many of these changes that we've made since then were to try to accommodate some of the concerns that were raised after it was in that committee or as the bill was moving through. It's also been through state and local committee. So some of the changes that we made here in the amendment, I think we're clarifying the language. Some of them were policy changes, such as reducing the fine if a city did or if a local unit of government did not comply with the executive order. But that was in the bill as introduced, and we reduced the amount in response to concerns that we heard. So And I did visit with Senator Chaudhry on the floor this morning and tried to share with him these changes that we were going to make, and we talked about how the general scope of the amendments didn't really change too greatly the scope of the bill.
Senator Sieben and Mr. Clark or whomever, for those of us who weren't on the Environment Policy Committee or in one of the other committees, can you just give us in very short layman's language what this bill actually does?
Sure. Madam Chair and committee members, the Mississippi River Critical Area was established by executive order in the late 1970s, and it was then. It's also, I think, important to realize that the critical area covers, it's also a national park. The same area is a national park. And in 2007 and 2008, the DNR released a report which highlighted some of the strengths and weaknesses of the Mississippi River Critical Area Program. And then, as a result of that report, the Friends of the Mississippi River and others engaged in a stakeholder process to try to address the report, some of the strengths and weaknesses of the management of the critical area. And we did have multiple meetings throughout the interim to try to address some of the concerns that were in the report, and this legislation is a result of that stakeholder process. Obviously, when we introduced the legislation at the beginning of session, not everyone agreed with it, so that's why it's evolved continuously, but I think we are much closer to agreement than we were when we started, and I think we've made good progress, quite honestly.
Mr. Clark, or I'm sorry.
Mr. Ouellette, with the City of Minneapolis, I just wanted to speak briefly to the amendment before you got to the full bill, if that's okay, Madam Chair.
That would be fine. Mr. Ouellette.
Thank you. We had a very productive meeting last week, both the City of St. Paul and Minneapolis and Friends of the Mississippi, to work out some concerns we had about the bill. However, I think the amendment doesn't quite get to where we think we should be. Specifically, the A5 amendment on line 1.5 says, take into account adopted local plans and policies, existing ordinances and conditions. I think that gets close, but I think what the city planners and the planning community really wanted to make sure is to ensure that the districts are consistent with adopted local plans and policies, because we believe that's what's important. We have these long plans that we've worked on a long time, both through the Metropolitan Council and our own critical area plans. And we would want to make sure that the guidelines were not just taken into account, but in fact consistent, so we wouldn't end up with conflicting rules and regulations. I think that's what's most important to us, that in fact is that they're consistent. The only other thing that I'll raise is an issue about, it's not in the amendment, but I'll raise it now, Madam Chair, if that's okay, since I'm at the dais.
Before we move on to the next item, on Mr. Ouellette's point, did you have a response, Senator Sieben or Mr. Clark?
Madam Chair, I would, I guess I'll just turn it over to Mr. Clark and then I can add if necessary.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Clark.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair and members. The language, the preferred language that Mr. Ouellette is referring to, the language that of consistency is, we believe, contrary to the purpose of the bill. This bill, big picture, seeks to balance the state's interest in protecting this resource for the public and for future generations with local units' legitimate interest in planning and zoning for their riverfronts. The idea has been, in critical area for 30 years or more, that the state will establish standards, cities will adopt plans and ordinances that are consistent with those standards, and then will continue to have a zoning and planning authority over their riverfronts. And we're not making, this bill makes no changes to that basic structure. State promulgates rules, and we're just trying to update those rules, those standards. Cities would then be required to adopt new plans and ordinances that follow their plans that the DNR would have the authority to review and approve. Now, that's the same as the existing critical area. Works right now. The DNR approves those. So we're not asking to change that. Once the ordinance is adopted by a city, the state has no authority any longer, and that's the same as it is now. So the idea that the language that Mr. Ouellette suggested, what that would do is say that the rules that the state should adopt need to be whatever the city is already doing. And that sort of turns the state guidance kind of on its head, which is why we explained to Mr. Ouellette and others who suggested it that we didn't support it.
But, Madam Chair, I'd
Senator
also point
Sieben.
Out, thank you, Madam Chair, I'd also point out that it does say in the legislation that we're proposing in this amendment that the DNR must take into account, so it must consider what cities have already adopted when trying to review, when reviewing their the new rulemaking that they would undergo.
Are there any comments or questions on this particular point? Mr. Ouellette, you had another point you wanted to make.
Madam Chair, thank you so much. I would just add that there is a little difference of opinion, and I don't think we'll ask for any change today. We're having kind of a language problem between those that work in the planning world and those that work in the rulemaking via the DNR. And that's in also in sub 4, where it talks about permitted uses and dimensions and performance standards. We had some length of discussion with the Friends of the Mississippi, and we thought we had landed on some language to change that, to take out permitted uses and dimensional and performance standards. They have since changed their opinion of that, and they are now suggesting not striking that area. I think this is something we can continue to work out. I think we have sort of a difference of opinion. I think the planners believe that permitted uses and dimensional performance standards is really a substitute for zoning, and I think the Friends of the Mississippi and some of the other folks that do rule writing through DNR sort of believe that these are just guidelines for that. So that's something we're trying to work out, and we have not reached a decision.
Senator Sieben?
Madam Chair, again, I'd ask Mr. Clark to respond.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. Just one point of clarification with something Mr. Ouellette said. We did hear that proposed amendment language. We did not agree to it in advance, so we haven't changed our mind. We heard it. We thought about it. We talked with Senator Sieben and others about it, and on balance felt that the language as we have it in the amendment is in the bill is preferable. We want to retain the language about permitted uses and dimensional and performance standards. We would like the DNR to have that language as they go about writing their rules. I think that when the time comes to bring the rules before an administrative law judge, it will be helpful to have the language, permitted uses, dimensional and performance standards in the statute to back up rules that utilize those tools. That's why we'd rather not remove them from the language.
Madam Chair, we'd
Senator Sieben.
Rather not remove that reference, but I'm happy to continue to try to see if we can't find some compromise language. Unfortunately, we couldn't reach anyone from the city of Minneapolis later tonight when we came up with some suggested language, so we can keep working on it.
So, Senator Fredrickson.
Madam Chair, I have a different question on the appropriations or the funding.
Well, we're still on Amendment A5, which
hold
is...
Hold my question.
And who moved the amendment? So Senator Fredrickson has moved Amendment A5. Is there further discussion? As amended. Is there further discussion on the A5 amendment? Those in favor of the amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, say no. Amendment prevails or is adopted. Okay, now we can move on to other questions. Senator Fredrickson.
Madam Chair, Senator Sieben, the appropriation in this bill is for rulemaking. But as I recall the conversation in Senator Chaudhry's Environment Committee, the department was going to incur some costs in defining the bluffs and bluff-related features. Is there an appropriation someplace for the commissioner to do that, or am I confusing this with a different bill?
Madam Chair, Senator Fredrickson, no, you are correct that this is the bill where the bluffs would be mapped. And I think that the intent here was that under the rulemaking, they would do the mapping of the bluffs and bluff lines, and that is part of this appropriation language here.
So it's included?
That was our understanding.
It's included in this appropriation?
Correct.
Is there additional questions or discussion about... We're on the bill now.
Madam Chair.
Senator Fredrickson.
I'm thinking through defining the bluff line. I think that would require some GPS and some LIDAR information. And I'm not sure that that falls under the definition of rulemaking. That seems like it would be more the implementation of a project.
So, Senator Fredrickson, are you... speaking to the title of the bill, that it's...
No, Madam Chair, I'm looking on page 4, line 11 starting. The commissioner shall establish a map to define bluff and bluff-related features within the Mississippi River critical area. And I believe there is some of that information available, but if my memory is correctly, it would also require some LIDAR.
Which may already exist, but...
Which... will require an expenditure of funds, and
some counties already have LIDAR.
Madam Chair, yes, they do.
So I'm not sure if this is one of them, but
Madam Chair, my point of asking the question is trying to determine if there is if the department has enough resources to accomplish this. Number one, and number two, of just saying the money is for rulemaking, if that would cover LIDAR.
Madam.
Mr. Knopf.
Madam Chair, Senator Fredrickson, if you look on 1.32 of the A6 amendment, it does say to develop and adopt rules. I think development could be broadly construed to include some of the activity, especially since you look in paragraph C, and it talks about it as part of the rulemaking process on page 4.11. At the outset of the rulemaking, the commissioner shall create a preliminary map of the bluffs and bluff lines. So it seems like it's an integral part of that. And I think with the phrase, instead of just saying for adoption of rules, it says to develop. I think that would include those activities.
Madam
Obtaining
Chair.
The elevation information and the setbacks would be part of the rules. Okay.
Madam Chair, and Mr. Knopf hit on it exactly. It also says on lines 4.17, at the end of the rulemaking process, the commissioner shall adopt a final bluff map. And these costs were incorporated into the fiscal note, including the LIDAR, and that's how we came up with this appropriation amount.
Are there additional questions or conversation about the bill? Is there anyone else that would like to speak to the bill? Please come to the table and state your name.
Senator, hi.
Welcome.
Good evening. Madam Chair, my name is Lori Lauder. I'm with the St. Paul Port Authority as Director of Business and Intergovernmental Affairs. We really appreciate the time that Senator Sieben and the Friends of the Mississippi River have taken with some of us at the Port Authority and the Chamber of Commerce and the City of St. Paul. Unfortunately, we still have some concerns about this bill, and we just wanted to mention a couple of concerns. We are concerned primarily with the language that references on page 3 line 3.7, that the commissioner shall establish districts through rule. And, Madam Chair, that's the difficulty that we've had with this bill and getting our arms around something that appears to be a process that will take local control away. For example, in St. Paul, they went through a multi-year planning process of comprehensive plan and zoning requirements and so forth, and that was approved by the Environmental Quality Board in 1982. And so this provides an overlay of a duplication of effort as well as providing the DNR with control over those local ordinances, zoning ordinances. Specifically, the Port Authority has been concerned, Madam Chair, about our river shipping terminal areas. We note some language in the bill that we did testify to in the past, and perhaps we just need some more time to talk about it. But on page 2, in lines 2.30 through 2.35, we would like to see added in after on 2.31, after barging and fleeting areas, the phrase "and river shipping terminal areas," as well as, Madam Chair, on line 2.34, where it says including industrial and commercial uses, we'd like to also add in there "and river shipping terminal uses." In the big picture, we are concerned about the negative effect, as I mentioned, that this might have on businesses if they are declared nonconforming, and I'm talking about some businesses, for example, like the Ford site, like Summit Brewery, and a couple of other businesses along the Bluff Line in the Port Authority's Crosby Lake Business Center, like the Johnson Liquor Distribution Center at Shepherd and Otto. If those businesses are declared nonconforming, we think that that's a stigma on these businesses, and it would make them less marketable and less reasonable in the marketplace. So there are those kinds of concerns that we thought we'd mention. And again, we do appreciate the time that Senator Sieben has taken with us, and we just wanted to register our concern that we just are not totally comfortable with this bill at this point in time. Do appreciate your time for these comments. Thank you.
Thank you. Is it Ms. Lauder?
Yes.
Senator Sieben or Mr. Clark, did you have some comments that you wanted to make relative to that?
Madam Chair, we have made numerous concessions to and tried to accommodate, and I think we have made many accommodations to the concerns that were raised. I'm happy to run through a list of at least 10 different points of areas that we did change. But I think perhaps what's most significant is that, again, we did have language now that says that the commissioner shall take into account existing ordinances when developing the guidelines. So certainly through any rulemaking processes, we're all aware there is numerous opportunity for input, and I'm certain that the DNR would welcome the Port Authority's input into that rulemaking process.
Is there anyone else that wishes to speak to the bill? Thank you, Ms. Lauder. Mr. Towson?
Madam Chair, can I just ask a question?
Sure, Senator Anderson.
And I apologize, I've missed a lot of the discussion on this. Senator Sieben, just tell me, on the last point made by the Port Authority, the paragraph 2 on 2.30 talks about barging and fleeting, and Ms. Lauder brought up shipping. So what's the difference here? Why are those terms used but shipping isn't? Do they mean the same thing? I mean, or Mr. Clark, I don't know if somebody could address that.
Madam Chair, this was the first explicit language that I've heard suggested for that. I did not hear from the Port Authority about this proposed language until right now, but perhaps Mr. Clark has additional input.
Madam Chair, Senator Anderson,
Mr. Clerk.
The approach that we've taken with this bill is to take the executive order in both its spirit and its letter and try to turn it into statute with rulemaking. So that language regarding shipping, barging, is exactly from the 7919, the executive order. So we made no changes to the existing executive order on that.
Madam Chair.
Senator Anderson.
Mr. Clark, I don't really know what fleeting areas are. I assume that means fleets of water vehicles or boats or ships or barges. So, I mean, I'm just wondering if that would incorporate the concept of shipping terminals or not.
I would think so.
That Ms. Lauder talked about, do we know? Seems like a similar concept to me, Madam Chair.
Madam Chair, I don't have any. Perhaps Mr. Knopf could add.
Well, Madam Chair and Senator Anderson, I'm not sure how much I can add to that. Barging and fleeting areas, it depends on your interpretation how far you take it. I mean, if you wanted to add, if you want to be clear, you may want to add in river terminal shipping areas to it, to be clear, if you want to make sure that you get those included in there.
Madam Chair.
Senator Stephen.
Mr. Lacasmo from the DNR just told me that shipping terminal areas refers to shipping actually on land, terminal areas. So I'd be more comfortable leaving the language as is that's in the current executive order at this time.
Mr. Townsend.
Richard Townsend Anderson. I'm a resident of Brooklyn Park, and I come before you to speak for concerned cities and individuals. I do not have official representation of the cities. Rather, I have spoken with employees and council members and even mayors of Brooklyn Center, Brooklyn Park, Champlin, Anoka, and Coon Rapids. I have 2 points I would like to make. The first is the Friends of the Mississippi have given the impression that a widespread consensus is present due to their stakeholder meetings. That is simply not true. The consensus that I have discovered north of the Twin Cities in the area I mentioned is almost uniform in opposition, not approval. Having worked with the DNR many times, these cities want to continue as before, status quo ante, that is, proposing their critical river plans, having them approved by the DNR, and then letting it be, rather than continually to change and change and change again. At the moment, they have had their plans all approved. Every one of them has been approved by the DNR. It strikes me that this is a solution in search of a problem. My second area has to do with, and perhaps more to the point, given this committee, the use of clean water funds for the implementation of this bill. If the use of the clean water funds is to clean up presently polluted waters or ensure that at least their condition will not deteriorate, this bill will in no way affect the cleanliness of the water. It won't make any difference whatsoever. At present, the control of the cleanliness of the water within the critical area is given over to the cities. They are implementing it at great expense, and the individuals who are also stewards of the river, who live alongside of the river, are investing millions and millions of dollars annually, voluntarily, in order to protect the shorelines from erosion, in order to protect the river from effluent runoff. I don't know of anyone, and I represent some 300 persons who own land along the Mississippi and consider themselves effective stewards of that land and of the river, who uses herbicides and insecticides and excessive fertilizer of phosphorus and others, things that would run off into the river. Most of us spend a great deal of money protecting the shorelines with retaining walls and rock and decorative additions to the land that have the multiple effect of protecting the river and the shoreline. It is their primary investment. And so they don't wish to see it degraded in any fashion, either water or shore. Now, the problem with this is that this sort of additional overlay of rulemaking and hence regulation, which will be incorporated by the cities as part of their zoning, will have a chilling effect on the value of their land, their ability to recover the investment that they've made, and their willingness to continue to invest their own money to accomplish that which this bill seeks to do. In other words, this bill may kill the goose that lays the golden egg. You don't have enough money to pay for what people are doing presently. If they stop, who will pick it up? The $450,000 mentioned is to make clean water. Actually, what the bill does is make it pretty sure. It's a beautification program. That is having to do with plantings and shoreline views and that sort of thing. It does nothing for the water. And so I wonder as to the appropriateness of using clean water legacy funds for this purpose. Perhaps another source of funds could be found? I doubt it. The bill is looking for money to implement something that has nothing to do with the purpose of the amendment monies. That's really my statement for today. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Townsend. Anderson, I'm sorry I missed your name in the beginning.
It most do.
Are there others who want to address the bill? It's late, it's hot in this room, and we do need to move on. So if you're going to make comments, please keep them brief. We have several more bills to hear.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. I'm John Curry with the Audubon Society of Minnesota. I will keep my comments very brief. We're interested in this bill because for 30 years, we've done a great job of protecting Minnesota's most treasured water resource through the metropolitan area. But in 30 years, times change. We need to go back to the DNR and get an update on the rules. I want to specifically speak to the comments that this doesn't impact water quality. If you go to the bill on page 3 and 4, this tells the DNR what it's going to be commenting on. And these are not local zoning ordinances. The DNR isn't going to be involved in density, commercial or retail development, parkland ordinances, traffic, lot sizes. The DNR will be involved in what the DNR is best at. If you look at B there, it goes to floodplains, wetlands, gorges. Floodplains and wetlands, natural drainage routes all affect water quality. The areas of confluence with key tributaries, water quality. If you go down shorelands, riverbanks, soils that could be eroding. And at the very bottom, number 14, is water quality. So we need the DNR to address those type of things with a resource that travels through 25 metropolitan areas. It's good to have some consistency between the development patterns in those 25 areas. And this is a nice give and take between authorities. The DNR does big picture planning. The local entities do a critical area plan that then gets approved and implemented, approved by the DNR and implemented by the local government. This is an important resource for birds. 40% of America's waterfowl travels through the Mississippi River corridor. 40% is hundreds of thousands, 600,000 shorebirds and mallards travel right through this area. And this committee knows what a wonderful resource it is. This is a small step to keep things up to date. Final point is a good one. We now have, unlike 1973 or 79, we now have 7 bald eagle's nests along the blufflands in this area of the metropolitan area. And there are some guidelines nationally about how to protect those and how to develop near them. And that's one of the many details that needs to be coordinated as we move forward. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Mr. Curry. And you certainly make some excellent points, especially about the change. There's a lot of change going on. And there does come a time when we do have to bring things up to date. So I appreciate your comments.
Thank you.
Are there other comments or questions from the Senator Fredrickson?
Madam Chair, I move that Senate File 671 as amended be laid on the table and considered for possible inclusion in our bill.
Senator Fredrickson has moved Senate File 671 to be laid on the table for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. All those in favor, any discussion on the motion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Thank you,
Senator. Thank you, Madam Chair,
Stephen.
Committee.
Senator Chaudhry, I think we have two bills for you. And some of you have gotten the wrong bill in the packet, so be sure you're looking at the right ones as you sort through. Senator Chaudhry, you're going to have to tell me which one you want first and which one you want second.
1892 first. 1892 first.
All right. I got to see if I can find my copy of that. That's my copy. I found it.
Great.
Thank you, Senator Chaudhry. On the bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This bill is a result of discussions that have occurred from a little-known entity called the Stormwater Coalition. First learned about this earlier this session, and we all decided that it was time to step up their activity and move towards some positive action. The coalition consists of watershed districts, industry, technicians, PCA, and others that have been talking about best management practices in the building industry. The idea of minimal impact design standards, or MIDS, is aimed at addressing urban stormwater runoff. A variety of minimal impact design standards have been implemented in few and far between instances, but it turns out that our regulatory system is one of the major impediments towards it. In short, we are local governments, and it's not to their fault at all, but the local governments and the environmental and stormwater professionals thereof are used to a traditional set of standards in addressing permits for stormwater runoff. Basically, it's the stormwater pond. However, industry and environmental technicians, scientists, and advocates alike have discovered new methods that can have the same or even better results for making sure that water stays where it falls. And ultimately, we want this because in the instance of the previous bill, we want to make sure that as little stormwater as possible runs off of our impermeable surfaces and into places like the Mississippi River. We want to create and encourage design standards where that doesn't have to happen. And when we do that, we realize a number of benefits. First of all, water quality is one. And particularly into our larger bodies of water like the Mississippi River. But at the same time, in urban areas, when you have large flash storm situations, you also have a lot of flooding and backing up into residential sewer systems. In fact, in my own neighborhood, we've actually had in large events that water backing up into the toilets and overflowing into the actual houses and turns out to be a terrible mess. So beyond just rain gardens, we want to figure out how we can get implement design standards that take into account the entire development and not only create better stormwater practices, but at the same time create additional benefits as well, such as open spaces, bird habitat. And if you notice that a lot of people don't know, you could even start to get into areas of addressing our mosquito issues as well. When you have large stands of natural grasses that attracts dragonflies, and mosquitoes hate dragonflies. But our nice green lawns tend to attract mosquitoes, and that's why we have a mosquito control district. That's just another example. But I'm going on and on when I should let our witness talk about this. This bill asks for monies to create actual minimal impact design standards for for stormwater runoff, so that those standards can be disseminated to local units of government for implementation in their various commercial, residential, industrial developments. So with that, Julie Wetterland from the Minnehaha Creek Watershed District.
Welcome, Ms. Wetterling.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the subcommittee. My name is Julie Westerland. I'm with the Minnehaha Creek Watershed District. It's fine. And I also represent the Minnesota Stormwater Steering Committee, as Senator Chaudhry said. And just to sort of recap a lot of the things that he was saying, what we're really talking about here is a really, frankly, long overdue change in our approach to managing stormwater. We've been using stormwater ponds for the past 30 or so years, and the reason that we've got such a proliferation of this technology is that there are calculation methodologies and design standards that dictate the development of a stormwater pond that allows the designer and the reviewer to agree that the pond is going to meet the standard. But we've since, in the last 30 years, known that there are better ways of dealing with stormwater that keep that raindrop as close to where it fell and get it to infiltrate back into the ground and filter through plants and soil, which is going to do a much better job keeping the water clean. The problem is that those practices such as rain gardens, porous pavement surfaces, protecting stands of trees, which can be a stormwater best management practice, and also, as Senator Chaudhry pointed out, things like habitat and climate change mitigation, the additional benefits of those practices. We don't have a consistent set of standards and calculation methodologies right now that allow the designers and permit reviewers to agree that that particular practice that's being proposed is going to result in the clean water that we all want. And so this calculation methodology that the MIDS project will provide will get us that step closer to actually facilitating the implementation of these more innovative practices that we know work better than the traditional stormwater ponds that we've been using up until this point. And one of the other things that the Minimal Impact Design Standards Project is going to do is actually raise the bar for clean water in terms of the standard that we expect people to meet for clean water. Right now, the clean water standards are not actually resulting in the clean water that we desire, so it would actually be a more stringent standard for water quality than what we have right now and would result in cleaner water for areas that are developed and for areas that are not currently developed but would be developed in the future. Water quality would stay the same or get better. It would not be degraded.
Are there questions or comments for Senator Chaudhry or Ms. Westerling? This bill's of particular interest to me because we just did a whole lot of stormwater work in White Bear Lake, and there's a bit of controversy about some of the methods that were continuing to be used when new methods were at least on the books or in the literature. Can you tell me how this $500,000 will be spent? I mean, exactly what are you going to do with that?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I do have a budget breakdown that I can kind of share with you, but essentially what the money is going to be spent on is a technical study that will compile the research that's been done on these practices and run it through a series of rather complicated technical models, which will result in a set of calculation methodologies. So this really is a technical study, and we have a lot of technical experts from the Stormwater Steering Committee and from the state agencies and other stormwater experts that are going to actually go through and review the existing literature. We will also be doing some pilot projects to sort of test the implementation of these standards. And there's going to be a stakeholder process that goes along with that will involve the development community as well as the regulatory community as well as the stormwater management community. And another product that's going to come out of this project is actually the development of some local zoning codes and standards that local communities can adopt so that the zoning code then matches up with the water quality standard for cleaner water, as well as with the calculation methodologies that we develop, so that everyone can be on the same page in terms of having a consistent calculation methodology and standard that goes across the state instead of a patchwork of standards from one community to the next, which causes real challenges for the design and development community especially.
And so how do these, once you have all this data and all this information, how do the communities fold into it? Is it when they renew their plans? Is it come down when you're all ready?
Madam Chair, members of the subcommittee, the local zoning codes and ordinance revisions could be adopted by a city if they're consistent with what's in their comprehensive plan. It may require a comprehensive plan update or an amendment to a comp plan, but oftentimes communities have goals and policies in their comprehensive plans which speak to the need and desire for clean water, and these local ordinance revisions would be consistent with what's in many communities' comprehensive plans already. So it'd be very easy for them to adopt this new set of local zoning codes and ordinances.
So as I understand it, you're actually giving them a set of tools to help them achieve the goals they want.
Madam Chair, that's precisely correct.
Madam Chair, the problem is that the local permitters don't have any of the scientific knowledge. In fact, and it's not their fault, because it hasn't been developed in a comprehensive kind of bureaucrat's way, and so that's what we want to use this money to develop. Another question would be, what now that we've talked about this a little, what synergy do you see with what they're trying to achieve here, and what is involved with that White Bear Lake issue? And is there a possibility that amongst one of the pilots that they're talking about, this your situation could be one of them?
I believe in White Bear Lake we have a plan that's been played out for the next couple of years, and there are some citizens in the community who think that the current plan is using outmoded methods, and so there's some local disagreement that needs to be dealt with.
So is this bill kind of on point with what's trying to be achieved, and we could, as one of the things that they're talking about, I imagine there's going to be an urban model or methodology, maybe a suburban, maybe even a greater Minnesota. We should think about that.
We should think about that. Senator Chaudhry, Mr. Knopf noticed two technical problems when the bill was being prepared, and he would like to explain those to you.
Okay. Look, Madam Chair and Senator Chaudhry, when this left your committee, something happened in the engrossing process. I'm not really sure, but I think it's partly because line 1.7 and line 1.17 are so similar. The shall was inserted on line 1.7, which was not the intent. So what I'd recommend is to amend on 1.7 to reinstate the stricken language and delete the new language, and then on 1.17 delete the may and insert shall, and that would bring it in line with what the committee actually passed.
Right. Okay. I'll move that.
So Senator Chaffee makes the oral, is that an oral amendment?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. To change the language as described by Mr. Knopf. Discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The amendment passes. Is there other discussion on the bill? Hearing none, Senator Chaudhry, what is your wish?
Madam Chair, I guess I would move that Senate file 1892 be laid over for possible consideration in the clean water funding bill.
Senator Chaudhry has moved that Senate file 1892 be laid over be laid over for possible inclusion in the subcommittee's clean water bill. Any discussion on the motion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? The motion prevails. Senator Chaudhry, do you want to take up your next bill?
Madam Chair, Senate File 1629,
makes changes to the Reinvest in Minnesota Reserve Program. It was heard in the Policy Committee, amended a bit, and what we're looking to do is, for the most part, improve, expand eligibility for the Reinvest in Minnesota program to touch on some kind of flashpoint areas where water is found. One is environmentally sensitive areas, but also wellhead protection areas, and then areas where livestock grazing has occurred. A conservation easement must prohibit grazing. Well, Mr. Knopf can go through this, but then there were some issues about what we can do during severe drought. For example, during severe drought, should we allow livestock grazing on reinvest in Minnesota lands? So we added that purpose to be allowed only during severe drought. And we allowed the harvest of native grasses in Reinvest in Minnesota Reserve Program for the use in seed production or bioenergy on those on the wellhead production lands. And then it makes a funding recommendation for this program. Mm-hmm. And that'll just have to be something that the committee hashes out and balances with the other proposals. John Jasky is here to answer any questions, particularly on the policy changes with RIM.
Mr. Jasky, are there any questions regarding the bill, Mr. Jasky? Senator Coogley.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair, and Senator Chaudhry. I guess does the language that is currently there, the Conservation Reserve Program, does that refer to the federal program, or is that some other program that, you know, and are you intending to replace the Conservation Reserve Program with RIM?
I'll leave that to Mr. Jasky to answer.
Mr. Jasky.
Madam Chair, John Jasky, Director of Board of Water and Soil Resources. And to Senator Kubley's question, what we're trying to do is simply make clarification that the RIM program actually was first put in statute back in the mid-1980s, and it was called in some cases the Conservation Reserve Program before the federal USDA adopted that same moniker for its programs. So I guess maybe they model after Minnesota, but they confuse things with taking the same name. So we're trying to correct that, Mr. Chairman, or Ms. Senator Coobley and Madam Chair.
Are there other questions or discussion?
Well, maybe we could wait until Mr. Jasky describes. I do have some questions about some of the changes, but I can wait until after they've described the bill if you want to do that.
Madam Chair, Senator Cooley, I've described the bill. We're happy to take questions.
Okay. Well, on line 2.1, Senator Chaudhry and Mr. Jasky, I guess I'm not sure, you know, is there an assumption there that all pasture land is marginal in nature? I mean, it seems to me that marginal pasture might be fine for sheep and goats, but if you have dairy cows, I don't think you want marginal land for pasture.
Madam
Mr.
Chair,
Jasky.
Senator Coobley, this list of things here, 1 through 10, describes things that are eligible for inclusion in the Reinvest in Minnesota program, which is the land retirement. And so what this says is that, pasture land that is marginal, for example, you know, may be susceptible to erosion or water quality issues if it is pastured too heavily, would be eligible for enrollment in the program. In the cases that language was previously, the hillsides were, of course, potential for erosion, but we also have wet pastures that may be in that same category that aren't on a hillside, so it just broadens that definition slightly.
So you're talking, Madam Chair and Mr. Jasky, you're talking then about land that would be classified as permanent pasture that would not be suitable for other crops because of the nature of its wetness.
Madam Chair and Senator Kuby, yes, that'd be an example. I think, you know, there are rotational grazing programs, and that's actually referred to down below on page 2, but that would be an example, yes.
And then, Madam Chair and Mr. Jasky, I guess on lines 2.6 and 2.7, why do we want to drop the definition by, you know, the AS, the former ASC service of a whole field?
Madam Chair and Senator Kubley, as you know, that organization's name is no longer the current one.
Mm-hmm.
And so what we use is the same standards that are provided by the U.S. Department of Agriculture, now either the Farm Service Agency or the Natural Resources Conservation Service. So we just utilize that information. I guess we could add as defined by the U.S. Department of Agriculture if you felt more comfortable, but it's been fairly obvious and everyone uses the same definition.
Okay. And one last thing, Madam Chair and Mr. Jasky. Down on lines 2.14 and 2.15, you have language that is similar to line 2.1 before it was changed. Do you want to make that consistent with 2.1? You see where it says land on a hillside used for pasture. That's the exact language you've got in line 2.1 before the changes.
Madam Chair and Senator Kubley, I believe that's a good suggestion. Good catch. Yeah.
Well, I'd make that motion, Madam Chair.
Senator Kubley moves that on line 2.14, the word on a hillside be stricken, and after pasture on line 2.15, the words that is marginal in nature be inserted. Any discussion on the amendment? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
The amendment is adopted. Is there any other discussion on the bill? Senator Chaudhry, I really, having gotten the assignment to work on this committee in this position, I've really learned a lot lately, and I have a great appreciation for wellhead protection areas, and I understand, folks in the back of the room that I've browbeaten for the last couple of weeks have really educated me. So I understand what that's for and how it works and how this might be a good idea. I think, to be honest with you, when I look at the size of appropriation you're looking for, and given that this year will probably not, it would be a significant portion of what we're going to have this year. So if we can do anything with this, it would never be this high this year.
Well, Madam Chair, and that's why when I talked about that section, I said that, you know, it's something that the committee is going to have to size up and balance with all the other proposals. But and this is just my suggestion.
Sure.
And that's an ideal world. But mm-hmm. when we get the all the proposals together, hopefully we'll be able to come out with something meaningful for what we're talking about here, if it's not the exact requested amount.
Exactly. Well, we've got 25 years, too.
Mm-hmm. Madam Chair, could I make just a couple
Senator
comments,
Frederickson,
too?
Sure.
No, part of the constitutional amendment for clean water was for clean drinking water, and wellhead protection certainly falls
absolutely
square in the middle of that.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if I, too, think $5 million is probably a little more than we needed, at least at this point. But looking at the rest of the bill has some very good policy changes, too. So. Mm-hmm. I think the bill should move forward either as part of the Clean Water Bill or as a freestanding policy bill.
Good point, Senator Frederickson. On that, Senator Chaudhry, do you want to make a motion?
I'll move that Senate File 1629 as amended be laid over for further consideration in the Clean Water Funding Bill. And I'll take Senator Frederickson's suggestion under advisement. Maybe we can put this in, amend this policy language on to one of the other environment policy bills or funding bills.
Well, Madam
Chair.
Madam Chair, Senator Shutter, you already have a piece of it in 1110.
Okay.
So it might be just a matter of picking up some of the other language that's in here. But a lot of what's in here is already in 1110, which was the chair's bill coming into your committee.
Okay.
Thank you for that, Mr. Knopf. Senator Chaudhry has moved that Senate File 1629 be laid on the table for as amended for possible inclusion in the subcommittee clean water bill. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The amendment or
Thank
the
you, Madam
motion
Chair,
prevails.
Members.
I appreciate the patience of everyone waiting there. We're going to make the last of these very quick, and Senator Fredrickson will take my place here.
Senator Rummel, which bill with viewers would you like to take first?
Why don't we take 1915?
The subcommittee has before it now Senate File 1915. Senator Rummel.
I hope I have some help with this bill.
You're coming out of the shadows, Senator.
Frequently accused of that.
I have an amendment that I'd like to have distributed. It's the A1 amendment. And this amendment will put the bill in the shape that makes sense to those of us who are working on the bill.
Senator Rummel moves approval of the A1 amendment. And this is the first hearing in this bill, I believe, so it's an author's amendment. All those in favor indicate by saying aye.
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 Opposed? The motion prevails and the amendment's adopted. Senator Rummel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is a bill that appropriates funds to the PCA to establish a network of monitoring sites. As you know, in the Clean Water Bill, at least 5% of our funds are required to be spent on drinking water. And one of the things we need to do if we are going to have a clear understanding of the quality of the drinking water across the state is to be very systematic about monitoring the wells and the water that we have in different parts of the states. And I think I have with me, it's Mr. Sandusky, isn't it? Mr. Sandusky, who can give you a sense of how much monitoring we're doing and how we can improve it using the clean water funds and what we will be monitoring with this particular bill.
Sandusky,
thank you.
Welcome to the committee.
Mr. Chair, members, Mike Sandusky, Director of the Environmental Analysis and Outcomes Division at the Pollution Control Agency. This bill would have us establish a monitoring network of surface water, actually, and is tied to characterizing endocrine-disrupting compounds as discharge from wastewater treatment facilities. The agency to date has done some monitoring, obviously, of some of these compounds, as it relates to wastewater, but our data set is very thin, and this would go a long way toward characterizing endocrine-disrupting compound discharges from wastewater treatment.
You can tell, committee, that I'm getting my bills mixed up. anything else? Do you want to address the amendment?
Sure. I can go over the amendment. Relatively simple changes, actually. A small one. I don't know what copy you have in front of you, but can I have that? That would be great. There are no such things as antibiotic-resistant compounds. The compounds aren't resistant, so it's antibiotics.
The lead lines 1 through 6. I haven't seen this. So page 2.
Section E.
Okay. Yeah, we have rewritten paragraph E. This is simply to make clear what compounds we would be monitoring. And as I think all the members and Mr. Chair knows, there are no specific classes of endocrine-disrupting compounds. So we felt it'd be better for everyone if we were very clear about which compounds we were going to monitor. That's the change in that language. There's some date changes. We haven't changed the final date of the report back to the legislature, but we have moved back two of the dates simply to allow us to contract for the sampling that needs to be done for this work and to provide us enough time for analysis to get to you the interim report. And I think that's about it.
Senator Rummel or Mr. Sadusky, the appropriation is blank in this bill.
Sure.
How large an appropriation will it take to facilitate this testing?
I think Mr. Knopf is going to have to help me out with that. I might have it here, but.
Yes,
Mr. Sandusky.
Mr. Chair, we did submit a fiscal note on a similar bill on the House side, and the total was $447,000 over the biennium.
Questions on that figure? Senator Rummel, do you want to amend your bill to fill in that blank?
Yes.
Chair's request to round it up or down?
Yes, I think we should do that.
Want to round it up or down?
Round it up to 450.
Sounds good to me.
Senator Rummel has moved on page 1, line 6, after A, parens A, insert $450,000. Discussion on that motion? There being no discussion, we'll proceed to vote. All those in favor of the motion indicate by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? The motion prevails, and the amendment's adopted.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Knopf. Mr. Sandusky mentioned for the biennium. This would be, it's an appropriation in fiscal year 10. Just for now, I was thinking on 1.10, you may want to say that it's available until June 30th, 2011, just to make sure that the money would carry forward through the end of the biennium.
Ms. Senator Rummel, do you want to make that motion?
Please, Mr. Chair.
Discussion?
What is the line?
Senator Anderson?
No, not on this point.
Mr. Knopf?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Rummel would be on line 1.10 after the period. Insert this appropriation is available until June 30th, 2011.
We'll proceed to vote. All those in favor of that motion indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The motion prevails, and the amendment is adopted. Senator Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Rummel, I know when we first talked about this idea, it sort of evolved into this testing upstream and downstream of the wastewater treatment plants. And I wonder if it would be valuable to include testing at some other, you know, selected sites around the state that weren't just wastewater treatment sites, if we could learn some valuable information.
Mr. Sadusky?
Mr. Chair, Senator, actually, if you'll recall, we got one-time funding for a statewide study, and that report, which does provide some of that information, is due to the legislature, I believe, this June.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Anderson.
And Mr. Sandusky, I forgot about that. And what do you know what sites or types of sites were looked at?
Mr. Sandusky.
Mr. Chair, Senator, there were more sources than wastewater treatment, for sure. And it was statewide. So it was a larger effort to characterize statewide presence of endocrine-disrupting compounds.
And, Mr. Chair,
Senator Anderson.
Mr. Sandusky, is this, do you believe this is duplicative of that study?
Mr. Chair, Senator, no, I don't, because while we have some information related to wastewater discharges, that data set, because it's not focused like this, is very thin. And I know that there is significant concern and interest in characterizing wastewater discharges for endocrine-disrupting compounds. So, no, I don't think it's duplicative. I think this further defines the size of that problem.
Thank you.
Further discussion? Senator Kubley.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Sandusky, you know, I know you mentioned that there were no antibiotic-resistant compounds. Is wastewater then sufficiently treated so that there are no antibiotic-resistant bacteria present in the discharge?
Mr. Sandusky.
Mr. Chair, Senator, there is some treatment that occurs relative to antibiotics and wastewater treatment, but as I'm sure you're aware, treated effluent still requires disinfection at the end of pipe. And we do not know that much about the efficacy of treatment for endocrine-disrupting compounds, of which the antibacterials are a subset. And I do know, and I'm sort of blabbing now, but I do know also that the University of Minnesota is doing quite a bit of work related to efficacy of treatment in wastewater treatment. So I'm not answering your question directly, but I do know that it's likely that the anti-resistant nature of the effluent, is still something we should look into.
Okay. And, Mr. Chair, just one more question, I guess. You know, you have quite a few different compounds listed here, Mr. Sandusky, but, you know, it would seem to me that, you know, I guess it's been a while since I had any biochemistry, but, you know, I would guess the same levels of each of these things that you have listed are not endocrine disruptors at the same level. Is that accurate or not? And how do you determine that, disruptive level at which each of those happens? I mean, that would seem to be difficult to me.
Mr. Sandusky?
Mr. Chair, Senator, okay. First of all, the compounds that are listed in the bill mm-hmm. are representative of the analyte suite that typically could be garnered from laboratory analysis. So, and that analyte suite is something that's representative of many of the subclasses of compounds that seem to be the point of the bill. That's why those chemicals are listed there. At the end of what you just said, you present the nugget of all of this because, in fact, we do have a fair paucity of information related to the exact endocrine disrupting trigger concentrations for many of these compounds. But this is not a study to deduce the levels of endocrine disrupting effect. This is a study to deduce the presence in wastewater treatment effluent of many of these endocrine-disrupting compounds.
Okay. So then, Ms. Chair and Mr. Sandusky, I guess my other question is probably moot at this point because I know that science has the ability to detect each of these compounds and to determine that they have an impact on the areas that you're talking about. But it seems to me that one of the huge drawbacks that science has is that they're able to talk about them as individual compounds, but they don't know how they respond together in the kind of soup that you would get in the effluent. And I don't know how in the world you deal with that kind of a problem.
Mr. Sandusky?
Mr. Chair, Senator, antagonism and synergism is a prevalent challenge in a lot of environmental problems that we're trying to face, and it's certainly part of this problem. This isn't the agency's bill, but I have stated before that this attempts to characterize the discharges, and there's a lot of science going on right now about what levels of some of these chemicals, in fact, result in endocrine disruptive behavior. So that's a huge question. It's not going to be solved by this study, but science is going on all over the place to try to address that.
Thank you.
Further discussions on Senate File 1915. Senator Rummel?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move that Senate File 1915 be laid on the table for possible inclusion in the omnibus clean water bill.
Senator Rummel has moved that Senate File 1915, as amended, be laid on the table for possible inclusion in the clean water bill. Discussion? All those in favor of that motion indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The motion prevails. The bill's laid in the file. Mr. Sandusky, thank you for your testimony.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, if we could take up Senate File 2005. This is the one I thought I was taking up. And this is drinking water source protection. So it's similar to some of the work that Senator Chaudhry just walked us through. I think I'm just going to have Mr. Stein explain the bill.
Good. Mr. Stein, welcome to the committee, and identify yourself for our records, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is John Link Stein. I'm the Assistant Commissioner for Health Protection at the Minnesota Department of Health. The bill has two components, which are taken from the governor's recommendations for spending from the Clean Water Fund. The first is expenditure for source water protection in fiscal years 2010 and 2011. To assist communities, basically to accelerate existing work the department does to identify and assist communities in wellhead protection areas. Wellhead protection areas are the areas immediately with short travel times from recharge to the well itself, so that anything that would happen in that area could potentially affect the drinking water of a community. The second portion of the bill tags directly on part of what the previous bill addressed, which was emerging contaminants in drinking water. One class of those contaminants would be endocrine-disrupting compounds. And the work of the department is accelerated again with an investment in identifying contaminants that may be present in drinking water sources, and then developing guidance, health-based guidance, for drinking water in those subject areas. So the bill provides some outcomes, targeted outcomes, for each investment of additional funds. What the people of the state get for these investments is greater protection of drinking water, which is one of the requirements of the constitutional amendments. Language, and secondly, some health-based information about these compounds of emerging concern in drinking water. And that is, again, work that we already do, but we would anticipate accelerating that work with this initiative.
Mr. Stein, on line 9, two of your goals are to assist 30 or more communities in fiscal 2010 and 60 or more communities in 2011. How many communities do you have that are requesting? Let's divide the question in two. Are first of all requesting this kind of assistance, and then how many do you think would benefit from this type of assistance if they knew it was available and asked for it?
Mr. Chair, the process of we go actively engage in prioritizing wellhead areas at risk based on vulnerability sensitivity mapping that are available from the Department of Natural Resources, County Geologic Atlas maps, and other mapping efforts that are out there, as well as it's not just the vulnerability, but it's also the population that's being served and the changing nature of a drinking water system. That being said, there are roughly 1,000 communities around the state that have community water systems. Those 1,000 communities are rated according to risk. We currently have plans in place for 193 communities in progress or in place, and those communities will be dealt with on a priority basis until we've concluded, and some of them will return as they expand and modify their drinking water system. So it wouldn't be fair to characterize the problem as sort of a finite list, because as communities change and grow and install new wells to meet their future demand, their priority may change, and we may revisit a community that had a drinking water, a wellhead protection plan, and need to modify that plan in the future. So the goal is really to accelerate the work that we're able to do currently. This would add approximately $370,000 in grants to local units of government to, first of all, do the mapping and the identification of their wellhead areas, and then implement their plans. Sometimes these plans are involve land protection efforts, as Senator Chaudhry's bill addressed, which might include reducing the intensity of the use on the land, might mean taking it out of some kind of active use and putting it in more passive uses. It may mean cleaning up sites that are increasing vulnerability to drinking water risk.
Thank you. Further questions on Senate File 2005?
Well, Mr. Chair.
Senator Kubley.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair and Mr. Stein. I guess, I guess I'm reading this bill as primarily a funding bill with kind of some broad outlines of where you want to go. And even though the outcomes that you mentioned are not delineated here, it does seem to me, Mr. Chair, that this is an important piece and we should do what we can with it.
Senator Kubley, I agree. Further questions? Senator Rummel?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would move to place Senate File 2005 on the table for possible inclusion in the Clean Water Bill.
Discussion on Senator Rummel's motion. Hearing no discussion, we'll proceed to vote. Senator Rummel has moved to place Senate File 2005 on the table for possible inclusion in the Clean Water Funding Bill. All those in favor of the motion indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? The motion prevails, and the bill is laid before us. Thank you, Mr. Stein, for your testimony.
You're welcome. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Finally, Mr. Chair, Senate File 2080, which is a bill about the Geological Atlas. We just heard about it as a tool that helps us in understanding how our water flows, and I believe Mr. Berg is here. Thank you.
Dale's going to join us too. Senator
Holmes. Mr. Berg and Dale
Setterholm
are going to explain the purpose of this bill for me.
Welcome to the committee, and please identify yourself for our records and tape, please.
My name is Dale Setterholm. I'm the Associate Director of the Minnesota Geological Survey at the University of Minnesota. The County Geologic Atlas Program seeks to produce geologic mapping appropriate for natural resource management, specifically water resource management. In order to protect the water quality of our aquifers, we must know where they are and how they are connected to the land surface. To make intelligent decisions about how much water we can safely use, we need to know the size, thickness, and water-bearing characteristics of the aquifers and the materials that surround them. These basic facts are conveyed by the geologic maps and hydrologic maps of a county geologic atlas. These atlases have been completed for less than 20 of the 87 counties in Minnesota over a 30-year period. The atlases support nearly every water program that's been discussed here tonight, including wellhead protection, stormwater management, contaminant cleanup, and probably most importantly, the appropriation of groundwater for various purposes. We produce the products of the atlases in a variety of formats so that they are accessible to nearly any user, and every project has a local partner to ensure that the information will be used and appreciated by those it supports. With that, I'll ask Jim to fill in his part of the program.
I'm Jim Berg. I'm a hydrogeologist with DNR Division of Waters. I'll talk from these handouts that have passed around. This first handout with the colorful pyramid shows the relationship between the product that the Minnesota Geological Survey puts out, the Part A atlases, and the product that the DNR Waters puts out, which builds on that Part A atlas. At the very bottom of the pyramid, we start with data gathering, well location verification, and some scientific test drilling. The MGS then takes that basic information and they come up with their surface geologic maps, their subsurface geologic maps, and at that point compile the information and publish it. And then at that point we build on that product by sampling, doing targeted sampling of of some of the more vulnerable aquifers, some of the more interesting aquifers, by getting water samples from domestic, municipal, and sometimes industrial wells. Those samples are analyzed for a key component, which is groundwater residence time. From that information, we're able to determine how long the groundwater has been in the water, and from that and other studies, we can figure out where the more vulnerable areas are, what we call them sensitive areas, which also relates to the recharge of the aquifers. That's kind of a quick overview of how the various parts fit together. On the next page, we get into the more specifics of how this bill would be used by the Minnesota Geological Survey and the DNR. I'll just paraphrase the introduction overview part by explaining that this bill has been patterned after an environmental trust fund project from 2008 and a recommended trust fund project from 2009, which provides funding for geologic atlases and deep groundwater level monitoring installations, which we call observation wells and investigative drilling. Historically, the atlases have relied heavily on existing information, mostly domestic wells in some areas. And while this is for subsurface information, this is produced in many cases the very first and very fundamental sort of information that we have about these areas. Oftentimes, the deeper aquifers, which are often very important, remain poorly understood. So what these two Environmental Trust Fund projects provide and what this bill provides is additional funding so that we can do some drilling. We can do some targeted drilling in key areas, understand the geology better, and also expand an observation well network that the state has for groundwater monitoring. And then some of the specifics of how this funding would be used are under the objectives and timing section. On the third page, we have a Gantt chart showing how the Part A's are progressing and being planned in the brown and light tan bars, with the Part B's following in the dark blue and light blue bars. And this schedule assumes that we would be getting the 2009 Environmental Trust Fund appropriation, and on the end, that bar in a violet color shows the projects that we would be able to work on implementing an acceleration of the County Atlas program with that funding. And a small map showing the progress that we've achieved to date is in the lower or left-hand corner. And then finally, on the last page is a larger map of Minnesota, again showing where atlases have been completed, where they're in progress, and some of the priority areas we hope to address.
Senator Chaudhry.
Thanks. Thanks, Mr. Chair. I agree with the good work that the geologic atlases and the survey are doing. Could you tell me what was the dollar amount provided by the LCCMR in 2008 and 2009.
Which of you wants to? Mr. Setterholm.
Mr. Chairman, Senator, for the Minnesota Geological Survey portion of it, the 2008 LCCMR award was $706,000. The 2009 recommendation is $820,000. Each of those is a three-year program, so they overlap by 1 year.
Okay. So then, would this request augment the LCCMR recommendation? Is that what the aim is? And then, if that's the case, why under the number two of objectives and timing, it says beginning fiscal year 2013, the DNR needs additional funding to continue or enhance a dish atlas production. Is that trying to, what are you trying to do?
Maybe I can explain that.
Or Mr. Berg.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Senator. The because we follow the Minnesota Geologic Survey with our Part Bs, again, going to the timeline, we have to wait until they're done before we can use the funding on the Part Bs. However, there is a, and so that's where the 2013 timing comes in. We'll right away be able to use the other money for drilling and monitoring well installation as soon as the funding becomes available. Did that make sense?
Am I correct to understand then that this would that this appropriation is sought to fund the activities beginning fiscal year 2013?
For Part B production, for the DNR.
Okay. Isn't it a tad early to request the funding for that year?
Mr. Berg?
Ms. Chair, Senator, I think this allows us to plan. It'll allow us to, determine the sort of staffing levels that we'll need for quite a few years in the future. There's an advantage to that.
Certainly.
Senator
Thank you.
Senator Anderson?
Well, Mr. Chair, I'm trying to plot out on the map what additional you would be doing. You said the Clean Water Fund is in the violet bars here, and there's no violet on the map. So where would that show up? It wouldn't be additional geographic areas. Part B is not additional geographic areas, or is it? I'm a little unclear on A versus B.
It's blue bars.
Oh. But yeah, the
bird.
Yes. There's no relationship between the A's and B's and the purple color. The purple just indicates that the Part B's that will be, the Part B's that we'll be doing in that purple area will be funded with this bill. We actually haven't planned far enough ahead to know which counties they will be. We do have, at least not for all of those starts.
So, Mr. Chair, is there, I mean, if we wanted to give you money in the 2010-2011 biennium, it would be money that would go above and beyond what the LCCMR grant would allow you to do. So could you hire more people so you could do more in the next 2 years rather than add this on to your 2013-2014 plans?
Mr. Berg?
Yeah, Ms. Chairman, Senator, that wouldn't be my decision. I can imagine it would be a possibility, but that's not how we currently have it planned.
Well, Mr. Chair, the problem is our appropriations, that's how they work, and we only do them in two-year cycles, so we don't give appropriations for 3 years out. I mean, they don't start 3 years out. They might end 3 years out. So I'm not sure. As I understand it, you wouldn't be starting this, the clean water funding part of this work until 2013. Did I hear you say that?
We would be starting the drilling part of it.
Okay.
Sort of going back to this pyramid in the front, we could be doing drilling in counties that we anticipate doing atlases for with this funding.
Okay. And
using that money for the data gathering.
So, Mr. Chair, Mr. Berg, can you point to where that activity, is that the brown part A, the drilling that you just referenced? On this, where do I find that on a map or on a chart?
That could be done concurrently with the brown part A on this chart. That's correct. This pyramid structure here is a little simplistic in that traditionally, we have done most of our work following the Part A's, but with this funding, and this is really the great part of this and the Environmental Trust Fund money that we're receiving, is that this allows us to do some drilling up front that we've really never been able to do before, and really increase our database and the quality of our knowledge, and install observation wells to expand the observation well network.
Mr. Setterholm?
Mr. Chairman, for the geological survey, our part, the effect that this new funding would have is just that we would start more new counties. And I can never tell you where those are going to be until I know I have the money. I go out and talk to the local units of government and line those up. And I'm doing that now, working, for instance, recently with Anoka, Isani, Sherburne, and Wright counties in that growth corridor. And, you know, I kind of make a tentative agreement with them, and then if I get the funding, they participate in the project and we go forward. So the effect of this is just that we would start more atlases sooner. And we're doing 8 of them currently right now. Several of those will end at the end of June, and then we'll be starting new ones beyond that.
Are there further questions? Senator Chaudhry.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. On the actual bill language, at the end it says this appropriation represents a continuing effort to complete the county geological atlases throughout the state, but then part of the appropriation is for the DNR to investigate physical and recharge characteristics. How do those two get, or how are those two reconciled?
Mr. Berg?
Mr. Chair, Senator, it'd be a good place to make a suggestion on that line 1.11. It reads, the Commission of Natural Resources to investigate physical and recharge characteristics, and it should say of aquifers. That somehow got left out of that line. And again, the how these are connected is in the initial data gathering that I had mentioned that we've never really had the funding to do before. By drilling investigative holes and expanding our observation well network, that allows us to do some targeted work on these aquifers and collect groundwater samples where, you know, and have them analyzed for recharge characteristics. And analyzing these aquifers recharge characteristics has always been a fundamental part of these Part B atlases. It was the map product was designed to assess pollution sensitivity, but in effect, pollution sensitivity and aquifer recharge are just different ways of looking at the same thing.
I see.
Mr. Senator Chair, Rubble. I have a question for Mr. Berg. As you talk about drilling to get your data, we are also hearing from other parts. I guess the PCA will be doing some drilling to get their data. Is there any way that you're going to collaborate so that we aren't making too many holes in the ground or duplicating the drilling activities going on?
Mr. Berg?
Mr. Chairman, Senator, yeah, these wells that we're installing, they can all be designed so that they can be used for multiple purposes.
Senator Rummel, Mr. Berg suggested we added the on line 11
yes,
before the period.
Mr. Chair, on line 1.11, after the before the period, insert the words of aquifers.
Senator Rummel has moved in amending the bill on page 1, line 11, before the period, insert of aquifers. Discussion? Hearing no discussion, proceed to vote. All those in favor of the motion indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The motion prevails. The amendment's adopted. Further discussion? Senator Rummel?
Mr. Chair, once again, I move to lay Senate File 2080 on the table for possible inclusion in the Omnibus Clean Water Bill.
Senator Rummel has moved to lay Senate File 2080 as amended on the table for possible inclusion in the Clean Water Bill. All those in favor of that motion indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The motion prevails. The bill's laid on the table. And are we through?
We're done, Mr. Chair.
The subcommittee is adjourned.
Mr. Chair.